welcome to the Ascending Install podcast series, and a belated Happy New Year to all, and here's to a prosperous 2022. Given all the industry chatter about exhibitions in general, we thought we would dedicate this podcast to our exhibition EI Live, the only dedicated AV and home automation show in the UK. We have two exhibitors joining us today to discuss this. We're joined by Stuart Tickle, Managing Director of AWE, the well-known award-winning supplier and training provider.
Hi, David.
And we are also joined by Chris Turner from Faraday, a smart home and accessory manufacturer.
Hello.
Both of whom are exhibitors at EI Live. As usual, also, we are joined by our illustrious editor of Ascension Install magazine, Daniel Sate. Welcome, Dan.
Hi,
Dan.
Good to be back again.
Anyway, before we get into the subject of this podcast, Stuart, what's going on at AWE these days?
Yeah, it's busy. I think the whole industry is busy, but we're particularly busy. I think picked up a couple of new brands, which is Bowers & Wilkins. So we're now the exclusive UK distributor for custom install for the full Bowers & Wilkins and Rotel product range. So obviously that's all part of Sound United and sits alongside the Denon & Marantz relationship, definitive technology that's obviously been going for some time. It fits very well alongside the brands from that umbrella company, Sound United.
And you're getting clearly lots of interest, I'm guessing, from those two particular brands.
Yeah, it was, if I can compare it to when we took on Sony Projection a few years ago, we knew that it was a massive opportunity mutually. And it was only September we've launched, but it's already going very strong. So in terms of what we're actually doing, we are in the process of fully refitting, where we've just completely refitted our reference cinema. As a result, we're in the process of refitting our performance cinema, and our show apartment's going through full upgrades as well. So, yeah, I've tried to put myself in the quietest room possible, but if you hear any hammer drills, you'll understand why.
Brilliant. And Chris, what's happening with Faraday these days? You seem to be, clearly from what I see on social media all the time, you're forging ahead, not least in the US, because you've got you and US operation now, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly, David. Yeah, so last year, the US was a big focus for us, actually. We're direct in the US, so we don't go via distribution in the US, so the same as we are in the UK. And yeah, it's been really successful, actually. So we quadrupled the size of the US business last year, actually. And we've got a kind of warehouse in Texas where we distribute some product from, but also directly from the UK. We recently also expanded into India. So we've appointed a new exclusive distributor for India. And as of last week, actually this morning, we just made the announcement. We've appointed Leaf Connect as our exclusive distributor for the GCC region. So that's kind of United Arabs and Saudi Arabia, etc. So no, things are really good on the up. Also currently trying to recruit for electronic design engineers to join the team, if anyone knows any applicants.
I saw that.
Gratefully received.
Any engineers, speak to Chris Turner of Faraday.
That's it, absolutely. Yeah.
May I say, unless they're in the southeast, in which case speak to us.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know you were looking as well, Stuart. Sorry. Apologies.
I think everyone in the industry is looking for people with technical experience, which is a good sign. It shows the industry's growing.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
I think we're probably looking for a slightly different type of engineer, Stuart, so hopefully we won't be directly competing. We're more looking for a kind of embedded software engineer who's happy to get down and dirty at the kind of bare level metal side of processes. So I imagine it's be a slightly different breed of engineer, but we're cross-reference CVs if we find other different CVs.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll just switch. I mean, it's a, like you say, it's a different skill set. Yours are just in a slightly darker room than ours.
That's it. Quite.
Well, look, that's good news. You've clearly come a long way, Chris, in a short space of time. I remember Dan and I remember visiting you in that little small office on that industrial estate somewhere in the wilds of, I'm not quite sure where it was actually.
Yeah, in Knapp Hill. So we're still on the same industrial estate, but just in an office about four times the size. So still on the same estate though, but we've moved from the worst office on the estate to the best office on the estate. So it's progress.
And you've got windows now. That's clearly progress.
Yeah. We had Windows for 4 days.
I did mention dark rooms.
We've now got about 10 Windows when we had about three before. So, you know, that's definitely progress, isn't it?
And I was joking about the dark room thing, but there we go.
No. We definitely have got a dark room for engineering. That's for sure.
It's good news, however, that we all seem to be busy. So clearly the industry is on the up, and it looks good for sure. Right across the board, I think. You know, the installers, integrators, they're all busy. It looks good for 2022. So long may that rain.
Yeah, no, I think it's all positive there, David. I think everyone's looking to invest in their homes, aren't they? They're not spending money going on holidays and looking to spend that more locally at home, which I think is massively good, positive news for our industry for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Now on to the subject of this particular podcast, EI Live, our show. And Stuart's probably been with us from the word go. I don't know if you were with the first one, Stuart. Do you remember we started the whole thing in the Etihad Stadium, Manchester City's ground?
So the Northern shows we did, we were in attendance. I can't sit here today and say whether I attended the very first one or not. But certainly we were supporters of the Northern events for a long duration.
Yep. That was about 11 years ago now. The interesting story, I think, but then I would say that. But we started at Manchester United, Manchester City's ground. And we started it on a wing and a prayer because we'd started the magazine probably about 7 or 8 months before that. From a cost point of view, which is quite amazing when I look back now, but we were charging £85 per square metre for a stand. And, of course, the industry just snapped our hand off. But at that time, there was actually a groundswell of discontent, which affected a lot of exhibitors, a lot of exhibitions across Europe. And the groundswell of discontent was all about organisers charging too much for exhibition stands. And so the ROI was never really as high as it should be. And so it killed a lot of exhibitions in those days. We put the first show on in, as I say, Etihad Stadium. I wasn't very pleased with it, if I'm to be frank, but the industry kind of gave me a school report. And they said, look, we do want this show, but try harder next time. So we then moved it the following year to Lancashire County Cricket Club, Old Trafford's ground. And we were there for 2 years. You were there. You were there all that time, Stuart, I think, weren't you, at that building they called The Point there. Quite a good building, but of course we outgrew that as well. Then we moved over to Event City, which was an interesting building. It used to be owned by the police. Someone bought it and turned it into an exhibition centre. But it was actually used to stash all the drugs haul that the police used to pull on all the raids that they conducted. The CD show, of course, was in the south. We work with CD, our association, quite closely now, but they had their show at the time in the south of England. For various reasons, they decided to cancel their show. That was when EI Live was born. I think it took us about, Dan, it probably took, do you remember that trip coming back from Paris where our phones were lighting up with that show being cancelled?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, it was interesting and quite, when you think about it now, actually, it's quite a quick journey from that sort of, that first show. It was actually quite quick from going from that to the point, which, like you say, was a much better space. Not 100% kind of, there's a few problems with sort of lots of light and things like that. But I mean, no venue was broken in. And then to the ex-police storage facility, which always used to make everyone laugh because they kept everything in there. They used to keep all the guns in there or any kind of contraband that they'd seized was in this building. So it was incredibly secure building, which is kind of one of the selling points, I suppose. But what happened with the CD show, and we were at
we were at a
ICE in that news.
No, we were at a SIM2 presentation in Paris. Do you remember?
Oh yeah, you're right. Yeah,
and we came back, and our phones were alight to say that CD had decided to cancel their show for various reasons, and then took us probably 10 or 15 minutes to say, well, okay, well, we'll bring the Northern business model of EI Live down south. And that's when the Southern show, EI Live, was born. And, of course, our first venue down south was Sandown Park for several years. Sandown Park was a reasonably good venue, but I think we outgrew it. What do you think, Stuart? It was good while it lasted, I think, wasn't it?
It did the job it needed to. So I remember those times very well because it was 2010?
Something 10 or 11, yes. I'm hopeless on dates, but it was around then, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, essentially, the obviously, we were and remain very closely involved with CEDIA, you know, as our industry association. And in years gone past, I was on the CEDIA board when it was more CEDIA UK than it is now, and was very involved with Expo, among other things. And essentially, what happened is ISE was growing. Rapidly, the big growth was in Europe because we're in a very mature market in the UK already. But then, of course, there was the banking crisis, and that caused a recession. It caused a lot of brands to tighten their belts, and you know, CEDIA was making efforts to sort of having grown rapidly themselves to kind of fill the footprint that was offered by Excel, and it was just kind of not quite feeling it. And then the banking crisis happened, and a lot of the major manufacturers pulled out, which left a more empty show floor than would have been suitable for Excel. This is my recollection, certainly. And the board at the time decided that the best thing to do was cancel the show, which I don't think was necessarily the wrong decision. It wouldn't have been a good show if they'd gone ahead. But of course, what they didn't do was put on an alternative platform. I remember saying to myself and vocalizing it to a few people actually when we when we found out it was going, it's like, well, that's EI South then, isn't it? Yeah, and I think it was 24 hours later the press release came out, and of course the rest is history.
We're nothing if we're not opportunists, Stuart. The interesting, you know, you remember that show, that last show they had, and you probably remember because you were one of the sponsors. At that time, that last show, CEDIA offered us one of the halls. I've always been involved in football, as my family have, really. And do you remember they offered us a hall with a view to putting on a five-a-side football tournament? Do you remember?
Yeah, I think that was the penultimate. Well, the last one actually happened. But I think that was, again, that was a sign of there was already a... Manufacturers were already feeling the pinch, obviously, from 2009. And ISE was growing and had massive football. So, I mean... It was actually a bit of a pinch point for the industry because as a distributor, you need UK platforms. And if you're a UK distributor, you need UK platforms.
Of course.
If you're a smaller manufacturer, so, you know, Chris may well have a view on this, but when you were probably predominantly UK, you know, going to ISE is nice, but unless you're trying to expand in all those territories, obviously you're into a much more expensive exercise and a more diluted presence. So actually, a UK show is really important for UK distributors and also for manufacturers that are still growing in the UK. But what actually happened is, as a global manufacturer, you know, you had the really big brands. Well, they just thought, well, ISE is going to cover it all. And let's face it, it's been a superb show over the years. But it is a international show. It's certainly European, but visitors come from, you know, far and wide. So the thing I think that EI does for us now and did at that time is it really said, well, you know, it's an affordable platform where we can attend and we can show what it is we do to a predominantly UK customer base.
Well, I mean, their loss in UK is our gain, but no, it was opportunism and clearly there was a need for it. But the price we came in at, as I've already said, £85 per square metre, and I didn't increase the square meterage rate much to go to bring the show down south, but it was still a very cheap show. But I hasten to add, we still made money out of it, but it was a very cheap show. And we needed to do that, obviously, to get the whole thing off the ground, like a lot of launches. But coming back to that football, I thought, I often look back now and chuckle, because we were oversubscribed. We had teams, I think we up to two teams from each company who wanted to actually enter a team. And we thought that we'd get overweight businessmen with their boots around their neck, you know, turning up to play football. No, none of it. Half the companies put semi-pro players in. And it was an amazing tournament. And it was actually won by Ollie French's company, Fute Automation. who I seem to remember had the goalkeeper from Stevenage in his goal at the time. So no one really got past him.
All I can say is I'm glad I wasn't refereeing any of them games, because they were quite fruity, I think, weren't they? Is probably the
kind
of way to describe it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I actually employed proper. I've been a referee, as you well know, you guys, and so I employed decent referees from the FA qualified referees. So they did keep track of everything, but there were a few people wanting to punch other people's lights out. It was, and when you consider it was an industry event, you know, it was quite amazing.
And you can just do that through voice control now as well.
Yes.
EI Live is the only dedicated AV and home automation exhibition in the UK, now in its 11th year. EI Live is unquestionably the main event for anybody involved in residential AV and home automation across the UK and Europe. Visitors are drawn by the range of exhibitors that can't be found in one place anywhere else. Together with our reputation for promoting emerging technologies and innovations in this sector. If you're in the residential custom install industry, EI Live is a must-go to event. To find out more, visit eiliveshow.com.
So we moved the show from Sandown, having outgrew it, moved it to Farnborough in 2019. To great success. The industry applauded it. We had a proper exhibition centre in the position, in the area that we wanted. Some people are still saying to me, however, I'll be interested in your guys' views. Some people are still saying to me now that we should move the show to London. But of course, if we do that, all the prices, everything goes up, not least the hire of an exhibition hall like...
Islington Design Centre.
Well, something like that, but in the centre of London...
Or Earlscourt.
Earlscourt. Yeah. Well, Earlscourt's knocked down now, but... The one I'm thinking of, I can't.
It's a lot cheaper,
name. But anyway, that was that. Went there 2019. The rest is history. We postponed it three times because of the pandemic, and of course we came back. We had 5 months to get the thing together. The industry were fantastic, and I thank everybody in the industry who have been supporting us and still support us big time. They supported us with postponing the show three times. And that led to us being able to get it on very quickly in 2021. Boris came out, I forget what month, but when he came out and gave us the green light to organise exhibitions, we had 5 months to put it all together. So we did. There was a few things that were bending behind the scenes, which fortunately none of you guys saw, but they were just really operational things. But it got together, and again, it was a great show. So... we're pleased, and that's kind of, I'm banging on now, I realise that. But, I mean, that's the kind of potted history for the show. Chris, you were with us in 2019, I know, in Farnborough.
Yeah.
Were you, silly question, and I should know the answer to this.
Were we at Sandown?
Were you at Sandown?
No, we weren't. But funny story there, actually, because 6 years ago now, when I was in a completely different industry before I moved into the smart home kind of world, I was in worked for a company called Talis, and I do remember. I hope my boss never Talis ever hears this, but skiving off for the day of my previous job to come to Sandown to try to learn a little bit more about the industry. So,
yeah, but where you are now, Chris, you could probably buy Talis, couldn't you?
it's a $14 billion company. So I don't think so, David. Not quite. But
so you bunked off?
Yeah, no, I did. I did. I bunked off. I think I was working at home and I bunked off early to go down to Sandown and learn a little bit more about the industry. So even back then, clearly, I saw the show as the place to go to learn about everything custom install. I remember walking around the show floor and having conversations with all sorts of different people. So yeah. Now, I think I sent it to you after we recorded this, David. There's a picture of me in the in my car with the barcode for the show. And my old work ID card, and I was basically pretending to rip it up because 2 days later I handed my notice in. So yeah, there we go, a little bit of history.
And how soon after that did you set up Faradite?
Oh, about as in actually, I think probably about 6 months later, something like that. I can't remember the exact dates, but within the year for sure. It was quite soon after that. So.
So I'm tempted. I'm tempted to say then, Chris, that you gained enough knowledge from EI Live to start Faradite, and the rest is history.
I mean, David, if that will help the show's success, then yes, you can put me on record. But no. On a serious note, I mean, where else would you go if you weren't familiar with this industry and you're coming into this industry fresh? Where else in the UK could you go and learn that much about the industry and talk to all the manufacturers and talk to all of the integrators? There isn't anywhere else you can do that. So in all seriousness, you know, I suppose it did open my eyes to the industry. And there's no other show that really does that. So, it definitely had a massive contributing factor, David, I think. Yeah, for sure.
Well, we enjoy putting the show on. I mean, it's operationally, it's a, I'm tempted to say it's a bit of a pain, but then those things always are. There's so much to it because we're battered as an organizer now. We're battered by health and safety like there's no tomorrow. And it's crazy, but hey, we get around it. But it's enjoyable. And of course, it's a great get together, which I'm always in for, as you guys know, a great get together for the industry per se. You know, everybody gets together. Everybody knows each other. We, of course, have our Smart Building Awards dinner the evening between the two show days. And as you know, we get something like 250 people sit down to a three-course meal there and have a bit of fun and give quite a few awards away.
Yeah, I think the sort of social side of it is, you know, it's important. If you go all the way back to the very first CI-focused show that I remember going to was the old Cedia shows in Brighton, which were great for me. I could get the bus. It was literally like 15 minutes from my house. And a big aspect of those were always
didn't have expense accounts in those days, Dan.
No, I didn't have one. But a big aspect of those shows and CIAV shows over the years in general has always been the social aspect of it. I think a lot of reason, you know, ISC was very successful in that based where it was in Amsterdam. You know, the social side of that was always a big draw for people. So we've tried to develop that side of, it's a bit more of a challenge, yeah, I suppose, where we are. And but you know, that aspect of it is important, and the networking and kind of fun side of it, because it is a fun industry. You know, we're selling movies and, you know, wonderful kind of smart home experiences and music. And so if we can't have a bit of fun while we're working, then, you know, there's something wrong.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And Stuart, you were 2019 in particular and 2021, you know, you have the huge AWE village and you've clearly done well out of the two shows. You feel that we could, how do you do?
Yeah, I mean, it's great. We need, what I've always said is we need platforms to show what it is we do. And when there's no shows, as in no exhibitions to physically have an attendance at, you know, it's quite hard because everybody can have a nice website and, you know, you can give away some, you know, caps and jelly beans and be very active. And obviously, and that's great. That's relationship building. It's a very good way of building relationship.
You as AWE are clearly very well known. Do you still see new people or do you see it as maintaining the business and increasing the business you already have? I know it's probably both of those things, but do you still see new people?
Well, it's always been a combination. So, you know, we're very proactive and, you know, whenever we're allowed, we've always done, for example, our own AWE Expo, which again, that hasn't happened since 2019. It was due to happen, but obviously for the COVID reasons, it didn't happen. But we have got one, which we'll be announcing shortly for, you know, in the coming months. So that's going to break cover fairly soon. But it's all about meeting people face-to-face, showing them what we do. You know, we've done loads of online training. We've done loads of launches, loads of events, you know, over the past 2 years. But, well, it's like I do CES every year, but I've done it online the last 2 years and it's rubbish in comparison. Because, you know, what good is it if we can't look at the new technology? Because all you've then got is marketing messages. And our job as a distributor, or one of our many jobs, is to distill all those marketing messages and put the accurate information to installers that they need to know with an honest appraisal. Because everything goes through all products go through a marketing process before they get to the website or, sure. or whatever. So it's actually only using and looking at stuff and having experience with the brands that works.
You just can't beat face to face, really. That's the essence, isn't it? And all the Zoom and talking to talking to computer screens we did during lockdown, we all kind of zoomed out. I think, David, you just
need to touch and feel products as well. You know, touch, feel, and see products, as Stuart says, to really get people engaged. I mean, if I look back to the EI Live show last year, I couldn't count the amount of times. Well, you know, we obviously had the customers that come to our stand that, you know, that already use our products. But the amount of people that came up to our stand and literally just picked up one of our motion sensors in particular and went, wow, it really is small, isn't it? And then you're like, well, all the dimensions are on the website, you know, but they still, until they can actually see it, they don't actually realize. And you know, it's the same with a speaker, isn't it? You can say, I'm not an audio expert at all, by the way, but you can say how amazing a speaker might sound, but until you actually hear it, it's you could be saying whatever you like. So I think, you know, for that reason, I think shows in our sector have got a really strong future, because how can you sell technology that needs to be touched and seen in any other way? It's very hard.
Yeah, 100%.
I would say precisely, and it's, but you can extend that to any of the sort of outlets. It's the same at a consumer level as much as it is a B2B level. You know, retail during the lockdowns, retail saw some big declines, obviously in in-store, because a lot of stores were closed and a lot of increase in online. But it was all cheaper stuff. The premium stuff really suffered, because looking at a spec sheet on a website, if it says it's 4K and it's bright and it's amazing, and it's, you know, it's got some reviews that say it's great, well, that's good enough, isn't it? But I'm sure if you picked up, I'm going to use the example of Faraday, you know, lighting control compared to something that's cheaper, you know, a website can make a cheaper product look really good, but it is nothing like holding the two in your hands or seeing them. And actually, that's when you see the quality in the engineering. And we are, at a trade level, we still buy products. We still want to specify and make sure the right products are specified for a given solution. That's our job as trade suppliers to help integrators do that. So they can go to consumers with informed advice and opinion. And that's what builds reputations. And you can't do that if you are basically guessing, you're filling in the blanks. And the online stuff has worked incredibly well, and it has changed and moving forward the way a lot of things will be delivered. But it's those face-to-face events like EI that we've, you know, just finished, and the CEDIA Tech Forums, you know, all of those face-to-face events. One is the product, but the second thing is that, you know, we led onto this through networking, as in people networking, the events, the entertainment, the fun. It is then relationships that's where the support and the trust comes from. And you build that up over time, but you really cement those relationships at an in-person event.
100%. And Chris, similar question to you, really. Do you, but you've been with us fairly recently. I guess a new customer, from a new customer point of view, presumably you do quite well, do you? Because you're still building and creating, aren't you?
Yeah, no, absolutely, David. I think, you know, the first show from us, I think I can't remember off the top of my head now, but I think I remember sharing with you, I think the night of the first show, the amount of new accounts that got created on the stand that day was mind blowing. I think I really can't remember, but it was a high number. I remember even you being quite shocked and quoting it around the place a little bit. I mean, that was
Sorry about that, Chris.
No, it's fine. You know, that was our first show, and to some extent, first kind of UK exposure, let's say, on a personal, you know, one to one kind of in person basis. And I think then, last year, that, you know, the show just gone was very much more about just keeping in contact with the customers, you know, because I think now, especially in the UK, pretty much all of the Control4, Lutron, Crestron, Savan, Elan, etc. dealers that need discrete motion sensing, at least, as and some of them for keypads as well, use our products. So it's more about that kind of just relationships and, you know, having those conversations and furthering the business we can do with them. I think it was less about kind of new business, but, you know, that's just as valuable. And then they always, you know, they always say it's costs a lot less to maintain the customers you've got than it does to acquire new ones. And I think, you know, just because we might not have taken on just as many new accounts as we did in that first show, it doesn't mean to say it's not relevant, because it's massively relevant to keep those conversations going with the customers.
Oh, I agree. I think maintaining the business you've already got is half the battle, and you know, increasing that. But there's two things that I and we strive for. One is, I'd like EI Live to be a selling show. You know, I know this industry doesn't necessarily lend itself to it, but if we can get people to sign, tempted to say multi-million, but maybe not that, but sign contracts on the day of the show, you know, that's what we strive for. And the other thing is that we strive for people showing products that it's the first time they've been seen in the UK. We do our best for this, and we try to promote that as much as possible. The dates we've got this year fall between IFA in Berlin, which and Stuart's Boys and Girls, I had a conversation with them about this, but you know, IFA's known for the big manufacturers launching their new toys, their new products at IFA. And then, of course, our show is a week after that, and then a week before the CDU Expo. But the idea is that the manufacturers who, of course, launch their new toys at IFA, the distributors would have those manufacturers, and they can come to EI Live, and hopefully it's the first time that those things have been seen in the UK. I mean, that's the kind of experience you've had before, isn't it, Stuart, with EFA?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because the timing of launches has become a bit more varied than it was, say, 10 years ago, when everything kind of happened at a particular time. But EFA is certainly a time where new products are launched on the European level from consumer electronics brands, certainly where they're showing a lot of product. And CES is where they're sort of previewing new technology for the following, you know, kind of April, May, depending on whether it's TV brands or
brands. Our industry is a small part of CES, Stuart, isn't it?
CES. They do have a big smart home area, but then everything's big. CES, it doesn't mean, you know, I wouldn't say walking around, the quality is the same as what you would get going around ISE, and it's certainly not as focused as you would get at EI in terms of obviously UK relevant product sections. But yeah, it's a massive and growing sector. But you know, I think the timing of the show is great. Hopefully it's going to encourage and tie in with more launches. At the last show we managed to secure the first European showing of the new Epson laser projectors, which was great.
That was a world first, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was actually a world first, and they pulled their launch date a week forward to enable us to show it.
Brilliant.
At the show.
Brilliant,
which was great. And because from a, you know, because that is a more like an EFA type product that would be launched from the consumer electronics brands. So you've got different points throughout the year, but September is definitely a good one.
And Chris, you're off to ISE, are you? Obviously, they've now postponed it until May, I think it is. But you're booked there, are you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, booked for ISE. So we'll be off there in May. Yeah, we were literally waiting to hit the button on freight, and got the email to obviously say that it'd been postponed.
You were on the
cut. I would have sworn a little bit louder if we had already hit the freight button, I have to admit.
So you were on the cusp of shipping all your stuff over there.
We were on the cusp of exactly that, and booking flights and hotels and everything. I mean, so yeah, it's we support the decision. I think it was the right decision to delay the show. I don't think it would have been a success running what would be about a week and a bit's time, right? So yeah, looking forward to it. But again, you know, with regard to the timing of EI Live, you know, we've got ISE in now May. You know, it's still a significant portion of time before we get to your show in September. For us, Light and Building is another massive show
In Frankfurt, in the calendar,
which is in Frankfurt. Yeah, So that was meant to be in March, so that's now been delayed to October. So again, you know, in terms of our product launches, you know, that's quite relevant.
That's been delayed to October now.
It has, yeah, got announced. I think that got officially announced. I mean, we learned through other channels before Christmas that it would be October, but I think officially it was last week or the week before. It's, I'm questioning myself, but I'm pretty sure it's October. Yeah,
I must read the press releases we get then.
Yeah, so that's. I think it's probably not as publicized as much as you'd think, but Light and Building ones is an interesting one with regard to EI Live, because Light and Building obviously has a CI industry, a little bit of CI in it, obviously, of course, but it's mainly a lot more commercial lighting, you know, than maybe residential lighting. But
still very much your bag, though, isn't it?
Oh, 100% my bag. I mean, it's what we do in a nutshell, Light and Building, for sure. So what I'm basically trying to say is it's great timing, you know, being ISE being this side of the year, EI Live being the back end of the year, you know, again, with, you know, coming out of the summer, you'd like to think we're, you know, there's lower risk of anything happening around the horrible C word, not that we mentioned that. So I think it's going to be great, David.
Well, it's interesting the decision ISE made, of course, if not a bit late, but I do understand moving.
It's very tough.
Well, moving that show is like trying to turn a tanker, isn't it? The size of it and the amount of people, exhibitors they go, it's very difficult. Very difficult. I do feel for Mike. But clearly it's the best decision, because if they had gone ahead. And it's clearly on record as saying, I think that would have damaged the brand big time if they'd have gone ahead and run it. But they took the decision to postpone it. So good.
Yeah, and you say it's very difficult for the likes of ISE. They've got to remain very positive, and they've got to, you know, be very clear about the fact that the show will go ahead until the point that it's not. Because the minute there's any indecision in that, then it's over anyway, isn't it? So they're in an unbelievably hard place, and but I think they made the right decision for sure.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I mean, you've only got to look at the images that were coming out of CES not that long ago, you know, and I never realised how ugly those carpets in those hotels were, because I never saw them before, and because usually there's just packed full of people, but it was like looking at something out of some sort of dystopian movie, you know. It was just sort of all this technology, all these things to go and look at, and it was just like one or two people wandering around with something in a plastic bag. And it was really quite dramatic, kind of to see.
But it was too late for them, right? They'd already, you know, they had freight, they had stands that were being built, you know, before when it was all kicking off to the point that the show wasn't going to be a potential success, right? So. Again, they're between a rock and a hard place, I think. So it's
I think it's really different. And one of the things I really like about the space that EI Live is in now is that you know, it's growing. We're becoming, you know, the national show that we always wanted it to be, which is, you know, really serves the ABCI community. You know, good size show that's easy to get to and does everything it needs to. But obviously, because it's, you know, based in one country, we do get people coming from other countries. In fact, someone actually flew in to the airport to go to the show, which is the first time we had that last time. But I think, you know, we are coming out of the pandemic, hopefully now. But I just think in terms of variables, in terms of things that can go wrong or things that can affect the performance of a show, we're in a good space now, because, you know, it's a national show, it's in one country. You know, there are just less things to worry about. You know, we've said already, you really feel for the people organising these massive international shows, but you're at the mercy of things you just can't control. So, you know, it is very difficult. So,
I think you can only do what you can and what you can influence. But you know, who would have thought in 2021 the thing that would have you know, potentially impacted attendance at the show was a fuel crisis.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, I started to think, what do we need to do to get this show on?
There are so many things recently which are, you know, like you mentioned, things outside of your control. So all you can do is put the best platforms on and make every effort to run them safely. So, but you're right in terms of, you know, a smaller event compared to a massive international event, you can be more flexible, you can change things, which, you know, we certainly thought was the right decisions when you postponed the shows and when you know, IAC made that decision as well. It's definitely the right thing. Yeah, multiple reasons. We, as an employer, we're responsible for our staff. So
it's just uncertain times, isn't it, Stuart?
Yeah, exactly. But I think but you still need to try. You know, you still have to put things in the diary and aim for something, because we all need events and platforms to show what it is we do. There are clearly cost ramifications for everyone, you know, particularly the event organizers, no doubt, or the venues. But without committing to next year's one or events later this year, then there is none. So it's dead before you start. So I think the only thing we can do is keep making efforts, putting dates in the diary. Hopefully things are all settling down, but don't speak too soon. We've seen an awful lot of things happen, and we'll certainly be supporting events that do take place, and if they're safe to attend, we will be.
It was a difficult time for us, you know, being an organizer. It was difficult not knowing what to do, and of course we're waiting on news bulletins to see what Boris was going to be coming out with at any given day, and it was just very, very difficult. But you know me better than most, Stuart. I'm not risk averse, so we're going to get the show on at some point.
Certainly know you, and I know you've been called an awful lot of things, and risk averse isn't one of them that comes up very often.
Okay, I think that's about time. That just leaves me to say thank you to Stuart Tickle from AWE and Chris Turner from Faradite. Thank you, guys and gals.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks to Daniel Sait, who will undoubtedly continue to make Essential Install magazine the must-go-to publication.
But we'll try.
Thanks for listening, and keep your ears open for the next in the Essential Install podcast series. Goodbye, and have a great day.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Essential Install magazine podcast. Please subscribe to this podcast in your chosen podcast app so you never miss an episode. Stay up to date with Essential Install in print and online. Visit essentialinstall.com.